There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 775. This is a very fun episode, Katie, because Donal Gleason is on the podcast. He's in a...
Everything?
He's in everything
literally
right now.
Everything?
He's in literally everything right now. But before we get to that, and what a fine Irish gentleman he was, and I'm going to say a goddamn delight, Katie.
He was a delight.
Man.
I love his accent. It's like one
it's
of those
the
accents
best.
Where like you almost don't hear it sometimes, but then it comes out.
It is the best.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that in a sec, but I assume that there's some sort of a corkboard activity that you would like to share with people pre-Christmas.
There is, and I actually have one that's somewhat relevant to this because it has to do with Star Wars, which Domhnall is in. And how do you say it?
Donal.
Donal?
Donal.
God, I'm going to say
you
that.
Don't pronounce the M. It's Donal.
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 Oh, Donal.
Donal.
I can't say that.
You can say donate.
So donate just, Donal.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Donal Gleason.
That he's in. The people over at the YouTube channel.
Well played.
At the YouTube channel Live from Mars have made some hilarious Star Wars parody infomercials. So you can check them out by going to bit.do/livefrommars. And they're really fun.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie Levine.
No worries.
So Donal is in Star Wars, I believe, The Force Awakens,
I
if
think
that's
I've heard
what
of that.
It's called.
Yeah, is that the movie everyone's talking
that?
About?
You know what's great is that someone on Reddit today, on the front page of Reddit, and I posted on Instagram, and I credited the person who originally posted it, so I didn't just steal their thing. I put their username and everything. But it was so brilliant that I want to share it with people, but it said, Simpsons predicted the future in 2009.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and it was an episode where they were pulling into a studio lot and one billboard said Star Wars the apology, and then Alvin and the chipmunks getting rabies, and it was and chipmunks
both
and Star Wars both open Friday.
God, they know
they've
Simpsons also
did
predicted
it.
They predicted
Simpsons
like Super Bowl winners and stuff like
and
that
Trump.
Like it's weird. Oh God.
But Donal is not only in Star Wars, which opened on the 18th, and I think you probably know that because I think it made like $220 million or some insane number in the opening weekend. He is also in The Revenant and Iñárritu, who directed Birdman.
Yep. He directed it.
And it is, I saw it in the movies, stunning. It's so gorgeous. Oh my God. And it's great. And Tom Hardy's great in it, and Donal's great in it, and DiCaprio's great, the fucking bear in it's great. I mean, it's really a great movie. That opens Christmas Day. So it's interesting that Donal will be in the top two movies this holiday season. And it was really nice to have him on. So here we go. This podcast number 775 with, say it.
Donal.
Yes! You did it!
Donal Gleason.
Yeah!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Buffy seems all typically chill. Oh, but then if I eat them on the podcast, then people complain. Because people don't like hearing other human beings eat. They get very upset.
You must be a horrible eater.
Why do people have a problem with this? It was the first...
My friend used to eat cereal like that. I was like, yeah, we can't be friends anymore. Just that horrible noise. It's like mixed between... What was I trying to... Yeah, like a cat purring and then just an adult male experiencing an orgasm. He's like...
Yeah, you don't have to add a vocalization. Like, eating is good enough.
Happening. Yeah. He didn't know what was happening. It was only cereal. It's just so weird.
And were you able to correct this behavior? Or do you feel like...
Like, we weren't eating breakfast enough together that it would be a problem. But, like, he's married now. That must be horrible for her. Like,
oh my gosh.
Like, every day of your life. Yeah, yeah. But, no, she's, yeah. I think he's corrected it.
Year three, that's... Would you stop fucking cereal sounds?
It's over.
No, you're not going to eat before noon if you don't fucking... Just get really, really...
Yeah. I did the best man speech at his wedding, and it was mostly about him eating cereal.
You have to make him do it there. So, no, you really exactly. have to hear how irritating it is. I just sound like I'm making fun of him, but it's a horrible, horrible trait. I was at the Star Wars... I was at Force Awakens last night, and it was...
Naughty.
Emotionally mind-blowing. I mean, it was... It was incredible. I've never seen a premiere like that.
Yeah, it was strange though too, right? Because I was at the Harry Potter premieres in London, and they were ginormous. It was all like Leicester Square. It was just rammed. But I guess because of the terror alert or whatever it is, like they were on lockdown last night, right? Like it was intense.
Yeah, all the cars getting in had to be sniffed by dogs, and they did the mirrors under the car.
Yeah,
and...
I was like serious stuff. And in a way it was sad because you can't get like all the fans you want. Like I'm sure there were people who were dying to kind of see Harrison Ford, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And didn't get to do it, but it was a pretty cool night.
Well, when I was leaving the after party, it's probably like 11 o'clock, and you were talking to Harrison Ford, and I didn't realize you were talking to Harrison Ford at first, and I was just going to pop by and go, I'm going to see you tomorrow, which I was still on the fence about because of like, what are you supposed to say to that? Okay, yes, yeah. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. Why don't we just talk tomorrow? I get real, real like annoyed.
I'm busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm busy,
I'm
man.
Talking to Harrison. Why would you interrupt this? It's one of the great moments of my life. Yeah.
So I did not cockblock your experience with Harrison Ford, but I did. But just that moment of you guys were there, and then there's there's stormtroopers walking around, and there's Kylo Ren propped up at the edge of the bar, and there's Lawrence Kasdan, and just, I mean it was.
Oh man, I know Lawrence Kasdan came over to talk to my dad and stuff as well. It was
he's
really,
so
really
nice.
Sweet. He's so nice. He's like, I've seen the guard three times. He was so nice to my dad. Like, it was very cool.
Well, I'm a moron, so I had not made the connection of you and your dad. And when I saw you at the premiere, I'm like, oh, Domino knows Brendan Gleeson. Like, then it all just. Oh, they both have red. Oh,
everything
they're
makes
Irish.
Sense.
Yeah,
acting.
It all. I mean, I hadn't even made the connection in the Potter films. I just didn't.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We're both doing our own thing. My brother's an amazing actor as well. He looks a little bit more like my dad, so people might be quicker to link them. But he's. It's nice, man. We're lucky to.
There's a Gleeson for every role, like every kind of role.
There is, except for female. My mother is not an actor.
She's not an actor.
No, and it's all boys in my family, so we don't have any. We don't have any. Although we did a play last Christmas, the three of us, myself, my dad, and my brother, and I had to play a lot of female parts in it, so that was fun.
Oh, that's amazing. That. What was the play?
The Walworth Farce, it was called.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's like it's an incredible play. It's about a father who forces two sons to be actors. How you doing?
This is Matt.
Sorry I'm late. I just came from Star Wars.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We can't talk about it, but
he already knows.
I'm in it.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, why can't we talk about it?
But because this goes out to this won't be out till
when's this coming out?
But I don't want to spoil it for.
Yeah, it's not.
It's coming out next week. You know, still though, still.
You don't want to wreck it.
Oh, you
on
guys
people.
Haven't seen. Yeah, because there still might be people. I feel like even the first week.
Normally, I'm in it. Well, we get it. Like, but,
I mean, I can't talk about it. I know what happened.
I'm in it.
They immediately, once you're done with principal photography, they erase your brain.
Yeah, yeah. They just hit you really hard.
I don't want to spoil it.
What was
that?
Yeah. What was that?
They hold
in?
Up one of those men in black things that erase your
brain.
And then they
things.
Just thump you full in the face.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Just to distract you while they
just the,
give you
the
a
little,
concussion.
A little flashy thing. Yeah. I feel like I was in Abu Dhabi, but I'm not 100% sure. It was a lot of. I don't know. It feels
my nose
weird.
Hurts. I don't know.
I feel like anyway. Mark Hamill spent 3 weeks on the set for no reason.
Yeah, 2015. 2015.
But yeah, that whole experience last night was incredible. And I mean, it's, first of all, I am completely blown away that you are here today and conscious. And I mean, like, the press schedule that you must have been on for the past.
No, man.
Really?
Yeah, no, I'm like, they talk to everybody but me. The other one, like Adam last night, was like, yeah, we were in Korea and Japan. And I was like, I would have liked to have been in Korea and Japan. God damn it. About Time was massive in South Korea. What's the deal?
Oh my God, it would have been awesome there.
Yeah, I know. I was livid.
Well, there's 20 things that you've managed to.
They flew out BB-8, but sorry.
No, I know. Yeah. They're like, BB-8 got my seat. They can't even put a seatbelt around him because he's just such a sphere. There's nowhere to put a seatbelt. He's a safety hazard.
BB-8 might count as a ginger. Like, we're only allowed one ginger per flight. We're not allowed.
Who else is a ginger?
BB-8's kind of a ginger.
Oh, that's sweet. Oh.
So they weren't all evil. Okay, I feel better.
It's good.
That's nice.
Yeah, but I mean, just, you know, and then also, I saw The Revenant.
Oh, cool.
I watched it Sunday night.
Oh, did you?
Nice.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie. I mean, it's
brutal and beautiful.
It's
right?
It is brutal.
I don't want to spoil The Revenant for you. Don't worry about it.
I'm in that one too.
No, God damn it. What is happening? Yeah.
Also, Brooklyn and Ex Machina. Please don't spoil it.
Listen, Nick Hornby did some great stuff in Brooklyn. I don't want to ruin it for you. Oh, God damn it.
Just so you know, the robot's going to fuck a character over at the end of it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. No.
Don't spoil Brooklyn for him.
Oh, no. Yeah. That bit at the end of Brooklyn where she gets in the helicopter and just leaves him in jail.
Crazy.
Devastating.
There was a never third option. America, Ireland, or fuck this robot.
Never.
Torn between three worlds.
I never saw that coming. Well, now it's funny because there's this whole. You watch South Park at all?
Somebody told me.
There's a whole Ex Machina South Park storyline right now.
I mean,
now
it
that's
is
great.
The most. And I got a. Is it Timmy? Is Timmy?
It's Jimmy. Yeah,
Jimmy.
Jimmy.
It's Jimmy.
Jimmy. He does that smile. She's like, when the lights come back on, just pretend everything's okay. And then the lights come back on, and he's like. You know, it's so good. I sent it to Alex. It's like, that's the coolest thing. I must ask for a print or something of that. Of just the thing, you know what I mean? Because that would be the cool. Because you know the way some people, like actors, I believe, like have like stuff up in their house from the movies. You know, like oh, this?
Yeah.
Oh, I was in this. Yeah. You know, it's like a massive poster or whatever. You know what I mean? It's always like, why would you do that? But it would be cool to have a South Park that was something to do with something.
But you should get weird stuff from all your movies. Like, you should get, this was the fingernail from the puppet that.
No, this is. I was talking to somebody last week, and he was saying, well, do you keep stuff? But, like, obviously, Star Wars, Harry Potter, like, they'll shoot you full in the back of the neck, like, if you try and get away with anything. And so you can't. You can't take anything from set. But, like, I had little things. Like, I was in a movie called Never Let Me Go.
Yes.
And
take an organ from
it? I've got Andrew Garfield's liver.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so I took one of the little bracelets, the tracking bracelets from that and stuff. You know, so I had my contact lenses from Dread and stuff. And so I was thinking, and he was like, you should have got your fingers from True Grit.
Yeah. Oh.
That would have been the coolest thing, just to have your fingers.
Maybe the Coens, maybe they still got it lying around.
Maybe Ethan's got them in his house. Yeah, I don't know. But that would have been the one to keep.
I mean, I moderated the panel at Comic-Con for Star Wars, which you were on, and I completely, you know, all the amazing things you've done, I had just seen them all, so I gushed on you about Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I don't want to spoil Black Mirror for you, but.
You're a robot.
It's a robot.
God damn it!
What the hell?
I have a robot. With the Force.
I've been typecast.
He's got to be near a robot. His writer says he has to be an or near a robot.
Yeah. At all times.
Yeah.
At all times. Yeah. Be it Julie Walters in Brooklyn or whoever else. Black Mirror was just amazing. My brother turned me on to Black Mirror, so I'd seen the first series and then like got the script for that, but he's amazing. Charlie Brooker's
Brooker's incredible.
Yeah,
I mean it's I've heard they're making an American version, but I don't know where they're at.
I heard that Netflix had like were giving the money to do another series of it or whatever, but I didn't realize it was an American version of it. When they were talking about actors and stuff for the one that I was in, I was saying, why didn't you get this person from the first series? And they were saying, no, we don't recast actors because they're all standalone episodes. And I was saying, why don't you do totally different episodes every time, but with like the same cast? Like if you had all the same actors, but they could play totally different roles in every single one. You could populate. It'd be like the old time, like what was it called? Like in the theater, they'd have like there was a word for it. Whatever.
Repertory.
Like you could have like a repertory, and they'd come and kind of do the same thing. The same way that your man does it with like Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper and everything, you know. About Robert De Niro, but they didn't go with that, so I'm out of work next year.
I mean, it'd still be around.
You
know, when people, it's just, I think the one of my favorite parts about that entire series is that Charlie has really created the universe, and as opposed to just having a bunch of standalone anthology, you know, these are weird, surreal things. Everything is connected, and you see the same things pop up in little bits.
Bit. I mean, some of them definitely take place in different worlds than the other ones. I mean, you know, like the technology is always advanced, but like some of the technology would have changed the world of a different episode if it was in there. Do you know what I mean? Like the world of the Prime Minister and the pig is different to the world. You know what I mean? Like that's more almost now. That could be exactly right now, right? But then the other ones are kind of more like a more dystopian sort of a setting. But I think he's the business. I'm really looking forward to seeing the rest of them. And it's always, in each series, my favorite script like was the one, because I did love the one with the Prime Minister and the pig, but the entire history of you was the one my brother sent me. Which is just like, you know, the
heartbreaking.
Content, oh my
it's God. So heartbreaking.
Jealousy. Just talking about jealousy through technology. What a brilliant idea.
Listen, there's no reason that you couldn't come back, but I would imagine you probably don't have time. You must be.
Oh, if it was for that, you would. Yeah, you just want to do good stuff.
Are you already? I mean, is your schedule for the next year? You already know what you're doing for the next year?
Unemployed.
Really?
Yeah. I got a lot of time off next year. A lot of time off, which in a way is good. And there's also no films really coming out next year that I'm in, you know? So that's good, too.
Do you think it's good to sort of say, like, okay, I'm going to give people a break, or do you think, like, you just
need it for
your time?
I don't feel like I need people a break. The stuff that came out this year, I didn't have, like, I had a big role in Ex Machina, but then, like, the other ones, I'm off to the side. There's more famous people in bigger roles in Brooklyn, in Star Wars, and in The Revenant, so I don't feel like it's been intense, you know what I mean? But next year, it's just good. It means you don't have, because three of them are coming at the same time, basically. It's just good not to do press for a while and just live at home
and
live
a human
Dublin,
being
be a human being in the world,
even though you're a robot.
And exactly.
We've proven that. Exactly. But is it do you have a preference in terms of, you know, because Ex Machina really is an intimate movie. The Revenant is this epic.
Yeah,
I mean, like every frame of that movie is like a oil painting.
Yeah,
and then of course
a freezing oil painting.
Yeah. I mean, is it oh yeah, like there's no, I mean, you watch a movie like The Revenant and you go, yeah, I would die in any other era than the one that I live in.
We're so lucky. We're so lucky. I know, because we'd all be dead at that time.
Well, you see people like fishing in the water in the dead of winter. You're like, well, how do they? I would just die.
And Alejandro would say things like, you look too cold. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean I look too cold? I am freezing. Like, I've started to shut down. My body has started to shut down. I'm sorry.
Well, act like it's warmer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not warmer.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie was this. I mean, like, DiCaprio's character is essentially just like nature's punching bag for like 2 hours and 47 minutes.
They didn't put that in the poster. That's weird.
That's really upsetting.
Leonardo
surprised.
DiCaprio is nature's punching bag. Yeah.
I mean, I'd see it then too. I'm gonna see it.
No, you
he's
should.
Amazing.
The movie's great. Yeah, and Tom Hardy is pretty. It's pretty spectacular too. So, do you have a preference for the type of movie that you like to do? Like, is it just acting as acting?
I think the preference is to do different stuff all the time. So, is the preference is not to have one thing that you want to do. The preference generally is to change it up every time. So, like after having done The Revenant and Brooklyn, which were quite, and Ex Machina, which were quite serious, and in all of those films too, like my character is kind of like on the receiving end of either emotional or physical punishment for, you know what I mean? Like he's not on the. I really wanted to change it up, so then I did a comedy after that, and you know what I mean. So it's really every job is like a reaction to the last one.
Sure.
So like Revenant was big, and then Brooklyn smaller, and you know, like it's nice to kind of keep mixing up because you just keep interested and you keep trying to find new characters. I think that's the reason to be an actor, I suppose.
And is it, do you feel any sort of weight or responsibility when you come on to a Harry Potter series or a Star Wars series? You're like, oh my God, because you are that now forever. It is indelibly, I mean,
Yeah, I don't. Not really. Not really. Again, it might be different. Like it's not like I'm Daniel Radcliffe in Harry Potter, and it's not like I'm, you know, Daisy Ridley or John Boyega in Star Wars. I can kind of duck and weave a little bit.
Do you prefer that?
For the really big ones, I quite enjoy that. But I never thought I'd get to like lead a film. I was in this film called Sensation like about 6 years ago now. Good Lord. But that was like my first kind of leading role that I did back home. And I never thought I'd get the chance to do that. I always thought I'd come in for 2 days and then... And I was really excited about that. I was hoping I would be coming in for 2 days on movies and then doing plays. I was really hoping that would be the career. And then I got this opportunity to be a lead, and then Joe Wright... I did this film, Anna Karenina, and Joe Wright, like, let me be romantic in that. And I didn't think I'd ever do that in a film. That I didn't think that would be what I would, you know, people would let me do that. And then something like Ex Machina, Alex Garland is my favorite writer. And I'd done two films with him, but I'd had smaller parts in those. And then to do the lead, like, I'd be annoyed if I didn't get to do the lead now. I think I'm getting, like, I'm selfish that, like, once a year you do want to be front and center in something that has a chance at being really good, you know?
Sure. So
I've been spoiled for the last while.
Yeah, well, and also Oscar Isaac is, like, one of the sweetest guys.
He's hilarious.
I mean, he was so, you know, I talked to him for a few minutes last night. He was just so, like, he seemed so chill about everything. He's just like, yeah, it's great, you know, but he's
not in an arrogant way,
just in a, like, you, I just feel like being around him is like, God, things are going to be okay.
Yeah, whereas around me, everything is over.
That's the fire in the belly.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always heard that, I don't know how people are performers and super chill. I always feel like, you know, if you're a performer, because of the nature of the business, you probably need a little bit of that fire in the belly.
Yeah, you need drive. I think you do need to have. I think there's always ego somewhere. You know what I mean? Even the nicest people, if you're willing to put yourself out in front of a camera and do all that sort of stuff, there's got to be something in there. You know. And then there's got to be confidence in there. But, like, Oscar is genuinely really chilled. So many of his family were there last night. It was really, really nice. They all love Star Wars, you know. And so he was having a brilliant all night. Like, it was great. I didn't get to really talk to him at the party afterwards, but I'm sure I'll see him over the next
while. I'm surprised you can't. I mean, you must be getting pulled in a million different directions
Really? It's strange. The carpet and all that is just surreal. You don't really know what to do, and it's like, hello, you know, and you know, okay, you know, like that's kind of. And then afterwards, they gave us a table, which is really nice. I got to sit down with my dad and my friend and my agents, and had my phone off, so didn't realize my other friend Carla was like, I didn't see her really last night, which is a bummer. But we just sat and chatted for a little bit, and then went back to the hotel.
And then Harrison Ford came over and talked to you.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And he was nice. He came he came over to say something nice. He's my hero.
Harrison Ford wouldn't do that.
No, he
would
totally did. He totally did. He was like, it was amazing.
You think the plane crash knocked him?
The man's an American hero.
I'm not kidding. I think maybe a little, because I had moderated panels with him before at Comic-Con, and he was the sort of gruff caricature of the, you know, pretending. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell how much is pretending and how much is like.
I don't know. He's super cool, but like that's his thing.
But he flies planes. Of course, he's cool.
Yeah, but at the panel, cool. But at the Star Wars panel this year, and it was after that. So, like, I hadn't seen him like that in a fandom type situation before, where he seemed appreciative to be there and very humbled by the whole experience and very sweet and very.
But he's still the coolest guy in the room.
Still the coolest guy in the room.
You know what I mean? Like, he can be as nice as he wants or whatever, but, like, you know, he met my dad, and my dad was like, this is, you know, this is my boy. And he's like, he's your problem now. You know, like, he's just cool. He's like, just cool.
Maybe you don't ever know. I don't know. Maybe you don't ever feel like. I think you can't feel like a cool person if you are a cool person. You know what I mean? Because if you are, then that makes you not cool.
He knows. He's cool. Yeah. Come on. Everybody in the world's been telling him he's cool for, like, you know, however long he's been alive. Of course, he must know.
But he still is. But, you know, people still have the brain of a performer. And, you know, as many people.
He's brilliant in the movie.
He's great in the movie.
There's so much magic in what he's doing.
Oh, my God. It's so. I mean.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Harrison Ford's amazing in it.
He is amazing. Oh, man. I was going to say. Yeah.
Why would I go and watch it now?
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, man. You know how they do it in Ireland, but here in America. America, we don't. That's my other favorite thing. There were so many There were so many like English, Irish, like in Revenant, and everyone's there were so many different, like, I think DiCaprio was maybe like the only American guy, about the only American guy.
Yeah, we had a Canadian. No, Stubby Bill. The guy who played Stubby Bill. American. Joshua, he's American. We had a couple of Americans in the crew. Lucas is American. We had a few of the English and Irish in there, which is nice.
The English and the Irish folks are always good at like playing like Southern Midwestern guys.
Yeah.
And you guys are real good at that.
Yeah, I wasn't playing Southern, so obviously the accent.
You were just fine. Regular.
We don't need to talk about it.
But you just had like a regular kind of. It was sort of like this American accent.
Because
Tom Hardy
American.
Was really he playing was, up the whole.
Yeah.
Kind of sounded like Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. You're doing that. Yeah, it's so cool though, isn't it? Yeah.
Do you like that as part of your character? Do you like being able to come in?
Yeah. It makes it easier to be somebody else, I think, if you have a different voice.
Yeah.
So and then you make it back to your own voice, because you know, so the trick with an accent, I think, generally is to get the accents down so much that you can just have a conversation in your own voice and not be doing a voice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you end up. So that's, I keep up the accent during the daytime when we're doing it, and then knock it off when we're going home.
So for Ex Machina, it seems that character, he's just a guy. I mean, he he's obviously supposed to be. If you're watching the movie, you're like, "Oh, that's me! Like I'm just that sort of regular guy that gets swept up into all this craziness."
Mm.
So, how do you just play a regular guy?
It's difficult, you know. Like, I don't know. I always loved Tom Hanks, you know, because he was always able to do that and make it look effortless. But then when you sit down with a script, it's actually really complicated. Like, you don't just turn up and be like, I'm regular Joe. I'll just react to whatever's going on. Like, the guy in Ex Machina, it was really discreetly complicated because he had to be so many different things for the movie to work. He had to be normal enough that you would believe that he'd go there. He had to be intelligent enough that you would believe he works this company and could have these conversations with Nathan. At the same time, he had to be not stupid enough, but like to stay there. You know what I mean? And not just run screaming for the hills as soon as he was like, listen, I want you to meet my robot. You're like, oh my God, ah! You know? And then he has to be lost enough that he'll connect with a robot and fall in love with something that's put in front of him. He has to be lonely enough to want all those things, you know? And then he has to be average enough that you could begin to think that maybe he's a robot. You know what I mean? Like, he has to be so kind of normal that you go, oh my God, I think maybe this is the guy, you know? Like, so he had to tick all these really strange boxes, and then you have to make him just look like a normal dude. So it takes a lot of work. Maybe it shouldn't take a lot of work. Maybe I should just turn up and not overthink it or whatever. But like, it was quite a job making him all the little things that he had to be. You know what I mean? That's why I always loved Tom Hanks.
What age did you decide this was a career path that you wanted to pursue?
I thought I was 19 when I thought that acting was fun, and then I was 22 when I decided to go full time. So there are two slightly different things. Like, one, like trying to make a career at acting, which is a stupid thing to embark upon. Not stupid, but like, you know, that's a dream that most likely won't come true, you know. But 19, I read a script when I was 19, and I was like, if I got to be in this script, I will be so set. This would be the coolest thing ever. And I auditioned for it, and I did it for like 5 months, this play, and that was the best thing ever. So there were two different moments. Then when I was 22, I left college, and it was like, do I try and get a job, or what do I do?
Sure.
And then I thought, no, I'll try and pay my rent by acting.
And so where do you go? Were you in Dublin at that point?
I was in Dublin, and I still live in Dublin, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what is the business like in Dublin? Do you have to go to London a lot, or is there?
Yeah, you do. That's exactly it. There's theatre in Ireland. There's some very good theatre in Ireland, but it can be tough. Like, I don't have kids or anything like that. It can be difficult. Like, the amount of money you make doing theatre is. A lot of people who are doing theater would also try and do TV or film.
Sure.
Anyway, even if your first love is theater, sometimes you might have to do the other stuff just to kind of keep on top of stuff. But actually, there's a lot of films and television made in Ireland. They have a really, really good tax incentive for films to shoot there. Braveheart was one of the first that kind of came over and did that in Ireland, like in a big way, that made that used the big tax incentive. They shot a lot of it there rather than in Scotland, which I'm sure Scotland was delighted about.
You're shooting what? Where?
Yeah. I don't believe it. Braveheart in Ireland. But it obviously worked out very well for my father. You know, that was his first huge break. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Like he had done amazing work before that, but this was a huge break for him. So ever since then, there's been like they've kept the tax incentive, they've kept it good, and then now the crews there, the Irish crews, are really good. We've got amazing film crews in Ireland, so we're really well set up.
Yeah, it's you know, the sad part is I'm sure there's a lot of Americans who are so America-centric. They're like, what's wrong with shooting Braveheart in Ireland? Oh no,
they're different.
It's not the
they're
same.
They're different.
It's not the same.
I know. I get a lot of you know. Yeah. Oh my God, you're right. I've never been to the UK, and I'm like. You know, just because I'm from Ireland doesn't mean I've been in the fucking UK either.
Did you just hear you're calming yourself? Doesn't make your statement any less true.
Doesn't make it less true. People spent a long time making that place a republic, but that's fine. So, you got to put your foot down.
Google something once in a while.
Yeah, no,
information
I know.
Is all available.
But then they'll say, I come from Montana, and I'll be like, what? I don't. So it works both ways.
Oh, the coast.
Yeah.
No,
I hear the beaches are beautiful.
I don't know. Yeah, Montana. I think it was Montana. We did a thing on this show I do last night called At Midnight, and it was the top Google searches state by state. And
how much of them how much of them are pornography?
Not as well. I don't know if they filtered out.
You don't Google porn, do you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, you do if you're like 12.
Maybe.
You're like, porn.
Why do you know that?
I was 12 once and Google was around.
You didn't know Google was. How old are you?
32.
Google wasn't around when you were 12.
Might have been Dogpile then.
It was about, yeah.
Let's not get into the specifics of what you were doing when you were trying to masturbate when you were 12. Sorry, I've led this down a really dodgy path.
Then, when you were a kid.
I didn't have the internet when I was 12.
Oh.
No.
I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, you.
Wait, how old
has
are
a
you?
Career. He's 32.
I'm 32.
I'm 32 as well.
You guys are the same age.
How did we?
Definitely didn't have the internet.
My dad worked for Hewlett Packard.
Can I tell you something? You grew up in Lowell, Massachusetts, where there's much more incentive to stay indoors.
Yeah.
He grew up in Dublin, where there's a lot of incentive to go outside and be entranced by the luxurious,
beautiful
landscape.
Nature.
That's exactly. Fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's
a very
I mean,
nice way of putting it. It was damp. It was awful, awful damp.
So it's, but the top Google searches, I think, in state by state, it's very, it varies wildly. You know, some states are obsessed with finding out about terrorism, and other states are obsessed about the Confederate flag, and Texas seemed to be obsessed with the Miranda Lambert divorce. Montana, wolves. That was the number one. Number one.
Really?
Still.
Oh, I love it. I have to go. When we were doing that film, Anna Karenina, we shot in Russia for a while. I think it was called Petrozavodsk or something was the name of the place, or Kizzy Island. That's where it was. And we were on this island, and it was just like minus 40. It was crazy. Yeah. And we were not supposed to have stayed on the island, but it ended up that we had to stay on the island. And on our call sheet, it was like, watch out for wolves. That was one of the things. And one of the nights, they had to have like security men who stayed with the gear overnight and all the rest of it and make sure like it wasn't taken or nothing happened. And they had their camp and all the rest of it. One of the guys went out like in his underpants or whatever, went out to like the outside bathroom and went in to take a leak. And when he opened the door, there was wolves outside waiting for him.
Shit!
And he started shouting. For like
you're
gonna
say,
but
then he started shitting. But thankfully, he was in an outhouse.
He was in the right place at the right time, and then he started shouting, and they couldn't hear him at the camp or whatever. And that was it. Didn't end. Yeah,
how did he?
He got cold. He got very cold. But then they.
But he's okay.
Eventually. He's fine.
Oh, okay,
fine.
Great.
This one, we were all laughing. Like, he's dead. The man dead. He died in a pile of feces, being feasted on by wolves.
You have to understand. You know, it's basically like the world is a refrigerator for meat for these wolves. You're just constantly cold.
Yeah,
we buried part of him.
And we ate the rest.
Yeah. And he was delicious. Well, this has been fun. That's it. I broke a pact. Like, you guys all made a pact with each other.
Yeah. The guys are going to be furious. Yeah.
Whoops, I gotta go.
It wasn't our fault. We just finished the work the wolves had started. Like, what's the problem? Yeah.
Still worried about
wolves in Montana. America is a... If you haven't really been across a lot of it, even if you live here, it is a fascinating chunk of land because it's so many different things.
Yeah.
Just all somehow tied together.
I've got the train across America.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, with a couple stops along the way. And that was absolutely amazing. Like, one of the trips of my life, really. We stopped off a couple of times along the way. It was just like, first of all, people you meet on trains are fascinating. Like, yeah. Their reasons for being on a train as opposed to on a plane. So many different. Obviously, some people are just scared of flying.
Sure.
Some people, and I thought, I wonder if it's an economic thing, but it's more expensive to go on a train. So it's not, you know, it's all these. I met a guy whose wife had just an elderly gentleman. His wife had died, and he was going across. He was taking his time, basically going back to where he lived because he needed to chill and kind of have some headspace and all the rest of it. And when you have dinner, you have to sit with other people.
Yeah. Sure,
you can't sit by yourself. So it's just you meet all these amazing people. This kid, like with a black eye, who was like not running away from home, but had left home because he was like selling drugs at home, and he got caught and beaten up, and he was going to work in like a fun fair.
Oh my God.
Like in the middle of the country, somewhere. Like, anyway.
So he was selling drugs to everyone on the train.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So good guy to know.
Carney and a widower.
Yeah, exactly. But you just see like the changing landscape. You just realize how vast the country is, just how huge, you know, like going through Colorado and all the mountains and how beautiful that is. And then like Moab in Utah.
Utah is
the most beautiful thing I've ever seen is Moab turned golden. At nighttime, like as the sun went down, I think possibly the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
I mean, it is. And I feel like a lot of people in America sort of take it for granted because you always sort of take your home turf for granted. But it really, people think a lot of cities when they think about America.
Yeah.
But there are so many expansive parts that are not crowded that really are, you know, everything is like everything looks like a photograph in a museum.
Yeah, and the people are lovely and they're just living their lives
in
this part of the country. This is what happens here. It's like, and then when you're on the train, you just get to pass through all these little places. It's really, really cool.
Have you been through Ireland as a tourist?
You know, that I was just about to say, it's the place you call home is often the place you kind of see the not the least of, but like I've been around a lot. I used to play the fiddle when I was younger. We used to go up to like fiddle like things up in Donegal. Nothing better than like a pub and 10 people sitting around all playing the fiddle. It's like they play like the fiddle music in Donegal is like punk music. It is hardcore, beautiful, beautiful.
That sounds amazing.
Music. Yeah, it is like amazing. There's a band called Fiddle, F-I-D-I-L. Their stuff isn't like really punky, but it's really beautifully arranged, kind of Donegal fiddle music. You should check them out. Their album is amazing.
Do you still play?
I can play, but I don't play. I don't really play. Also, a band called De Laurentiis. Let me tell you all the good Irish bands.
You please, educate us.
D-E-L-O-R-E-N-T-O-S are absolutely phenomenal. You should check them out.
You writing that down?
They've got like
good.
Yeah. Seriously good. Fiddle are amazing. Squarehead. I did a music video for a band called Squarehead. With my brother. That's kind of sweet. You should check that out. A song called 2025, and they're like a mixture between like Weezer and Nirvana and the Beach Boys or something. They're really, really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Check out those guys. Anyways, so I've been up to Donegal, down to Kerry, and then the West Coast is gorgeous. I've been out to Galway a lot. Galway is just unbelievable, but I haven't been at the Giant's Causeway, which is, you know what the Giant's Causeway is?
No.
I think they show it in like Game of Thrones and all sorts. It's one of these things, but there's all legends in Ireland based around myths and stuff. And it's all this, I think it's volcanic rock that's kind of like bursting up out of the sea, but they're all like, not like hexagons maybe, I think they're six-sided, all of them, but like pillars. It's like Superman's home, you know, but all these things are sticking out of the thing. And the Burren in Galway, I've been there. I'm just bored, I'm sorry. I'm just
You're not at all, anyway. because I think a lot of people, you know, especially, I promise you that people are listening to this and they'll go, wow, you know, we should go to Ireland. But then people never know. They go, where do you go? Like, where do you...
The funniest thing is in England, people going like, like, I've always wanted to go to Ireland. And you're like, it's 40 minutes on the plane. If you really want to go to Ireland, you can go to Ireland. It's not a problem. Yeah, but it's like some mythic faraway place. You know, like, you know, I've always dreamed of going there. Like, you can do it in a weekend. But yeah, it's different if you're in America. It's a long way to go.
Oh, man. Maybe we should have gone there.
Well, I've been wanting to go to Ireland forever. Just to
do it.
Guinness in a proper pub.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Where would you go? Keogh's in Dublin. It's like a really nice snug and like a really, really good pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
Really good pint of Guinness. And then there's places out like in Galway, there's a couple of absolutely amazing bars for a pint of Guinness.
I watched some PBS special where Frank McCourt just was walking in and out of pubs in Ireland, and he was like showing you the pubs of Ireland.
Sad, you know, like in a way, like the smoking ban and the recession killed off a lot of really good pubs. But there's still some great pubs. Like my favorite pubs, like the kind of not old man pubs, but the ones where you go in, it's not busy, there's not like TVs and all the rest. Or maybe one TV like showing Coronation Street or whatever. Sure. And they turn it up for the end of it. You know what I mean? Oh my God, I can't believe his own sister. You know, and then they turn it back to everything. And then you sit down, it's quiet, and it's just, you can have a chat. Like that's my idea of like a perfect evening. Is like two pints of Guinness and a chat. Like, you know,
we ended up Iceland and
for your honeymoon,
and we never got to.
You went to Iceland.
Yeah,
is it amazing?
It is beautiful.
Yeah. I kind of have to
see everything. It's amazing because like half of it's like this desolate green, and then there's ice. You can go north and you can see glaciers, and there's an ice hotel if you go at the right time of year. The Northern Lights are there.
If you go another time of year, it's just a puddle.
It's just a puddle.
Yeah.
And it's a water hotel.
And a mini bar. God damn it.
But like Reykjavik itself has 160,000 people in it. And the whole of Iceland has about 200,000 people.
Wow,
that's incredible!
So once you get out of Reykjavik, it's like you're going a long way towards
Ireland. Maybe Ireland. You know, I'm getting married next year, and I was thinking we were like, let's go to Japan because we've never been to Japan, and I never get
Japan's
time
awesome.
Off. And
it's too hype. It's too. You want to just relax on your honeymoon? I feel
you
like
you can
Tokyo
relax in Japan, but you don't have to go to Tokyo.
You can go to Kyoto. You could go a lot of places. Lydia wants to go to there's a forest where apparently, if you go in, you go mad, and people do not apparently the suicide forest. And people do not emerge from the forest. She's like,
great.
She wants to go there on your honeymoon.
Is that a
I
bad
don't
sign?
Think this is going to work out, man. I mean, I don't want to call your marriage before it even gets started. She's like, how about you go into the forest on our honeymoon? Like, are you going to come in?
Weird.
I'm going to wait here.
No, I'm going to wait here. Yeah. You tell me how it is, and everything's going to be fine.
It's been great. You're getting married. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's great. But Ireland is worth. Yeah, Ireland is worth checking out. Ireland's a beautiful, beautiful
place. We were sort of joking about it before, but the idea of like, you know, someone saying, oh, I've never been to the UK and trying to lump Ireland in with everything. So what is it, how is it to the world, like to establish your own identity? Like what does it mean to be Irish, do you think? And what do you think people constantly miss about that? And what's important, you know, for Irish pride?
Just read Angela's Ashes. It's all in there.
I mean, how
sucking
do you...
the phlegm out of a baby. That's what we all think of when we think of Ireland. No, you know, like in a way, it's a funny thing. You know, Martin McDonagh is like my favorite playwright. He's amazing. He's just the best. And he had a thing. I don't know if he still feels the same way, but where he would talk about how you can't claim the greatness of others for yourself. That there's in some ways it's a ridiculous thing to be proud of being Irish in some ways, because you just because you're Irish doesn't mean you claim the works of James Joyce as your own, or like you've got the same fighting spirit or anything like that, you know. But at the same time, I am proud of being Irish, because I agree with him about that. Like I didn't write Ulysses. I haven't even read Ulysses. So I tried, god damn it. But I read the short stories. It's more my thing. At the Races is great. But, I don't know how much you can claim for yourself, but I do know I'm really proud of being Irish. I do know that when people go there, they do say that people are really friendly. But I also know that when I come to America, I find people to be extraordinarily friendly, and in London as well, you know, like all, you know. So I don't know. I just know that I'm proud to be there, and I know that it's definitely home.
Yeah.
You know, like it's where I enjoy living. I live like a half hour outside of the city. I can like walk in and out of the city every morning, and it's just, you know, it's just, it's a beautiful place to be. and it gets rainy as all hell and windy and all the rest of it. And that's just part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's nice.
Do you, so when you come to a climate like this in Los Angeles, or do you sort of miss the rain?
No. When I was younger, I used to hate the sun, couldn't handle it. And when you'd be with somebody and they would, you know, they'd be like, I want to go on holiday, it's somewhere sunny. I'm like, that's my work. Because in the heat, I'm a nightmare.
Oh.
I'm a horrible person in the heat. Like the Revenant was grand. You know what I mean? I was like, this is my kind of climate. This is where I'm supposed to exist. It's good. And my worst ever day on set was like on this film About Time, where we had to pretend it was winter time, but it was summer and it was on the beach and it was like, you know, 32 degrees, and I don't know what that is over here, and all dressed up in an overcoat and they're putting a scarf and it's like, you put that fucking scarf and you're gonna have a problem. You know, so that's my idea of a horrible, horrible thing. But now I do quite like the sun. It's probably vitamin D is probably important, probably. They keep telling me it is, so it probably is.
Drink milk, you're fine.
But I would imagine, because I think you and I have some of the same types of genes, and we burn very easily.
I could die.
In fairness, you're four shades darker than he is.
Well, yeah, look at that. I know you can't see this.
I can see.
On the podcast.
I just see a table. I don't even see skin.
I just see veins.
Those fish, you can see their organs. Yeah. You can see everything. Oh my god!
Like the throbbing.
Yeah. You can see my heart beating inside my chest.
Well, he's Irish.
Oh, he's nervous. He's beating quicker.
Yeah, I'm not nervous. No, I can see. I can see this is filling up. Yeah, it's the sun is I don't tend to like to go out in the sun, but at the same time, if I'm in a rainy climate for more than a couple of days, or if I'm in a rainy event, then I get...
It can get you down.
It does get you down. How do you...
Well,
you
know, on The Revenant, it did. I mean, on The Revenant, it did get us down. That was like walking in and out of rivers every day for 7 months. For 7 months, man. It's like... Yeah, you know, it'd be nice if the sun came out.
They at least throw a wetsuit under your...
They did, but there were times when we had to do where you had to be in and out of the water in the same scene, and you dress differently. If you want to keep warm in water, you dress very differently than if you want to keep warm on dry land, because if you sweat and it dries on you, then it starts freezing on you, you're in a lot of trouble. And that happens if you're wearing a wetsuit and you're outside of the water, whereas if you're in the water, it's fine. So it was really complicated. The costume designers did a brilliant job doing everything they could, but it was pretty severe sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it is. The entire movie is just... Almost the entire movie is just trekking through the snow.
No, hang on. I got to sell this thing. Trekking through the snow.
Well, it's like trying to survive through these
The
elements.
Trailer reminds me of Cold Mountain a little bit. The Civil War movie, Cold Mountain. Yeah.
My dad's in that.
Is he?
My father is in that, yes.
What if you're like, but I never saw it.
Yeah. Jude Law, folks, a robot.
Nicole.
But it's very different to Cold Mountain. I know what you mean. Like, some of the landscapes are similar, but it's very, very different, actually, because it's kind of like claustrophobic. And what I like about it is that, like, in Ex Machina, like, it was really claustrophobic in small rooms, and it was all, like, you know, like, people torturing each other with their minds, you know? Like, this is kind of what was happening. And I think you get a similar thing of that pressure, you know, in The Revenant of it feels claustrophobic, except for you can see for miles.
Oh, you know, I hadn't articulated it that way, but that's exactly right.
Yeah. Like, that's, I don't know if it's exactly agoraphobia or something, but it's like, it's just like they're so trapped in there and by their circumstances.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what keeps it like for me, like the minute to minute thing. Because when I'm talking to people about it, it's really difficult. You know, you say it's about this guy who has an awful time altogether, and they're like, why the hell would
he
I watch
a really
that movie?
Bad couple of days.
Oh my god, this guy. Things just could not have gone worse for Liam.
You would not
want to
be him.
Yeah. And like, well, then why the hell would I watch it? But I found it really compelling, like just minute to minute, because the pressure to keep surviving is actually really, I mean, entertaining is almost the wrong word, but almost the right word. It's like, you know, like just that thing of continuing to go. You're like, how the hell is this happening, you know, all the time? So, yeah, that's how I'm trying to, articulate it.
That's such a great way to put it, too, because I've driven across country before, and you get, even just being in the comfort of an automobile, you get this weird claustrophobia because you're in the middle of nothing. And so it's sort of like, well, where do I go? I mean,
You're trapped because there's nothing to kind of hold on
to. Yes. You're almost trapped by the infinity of choice, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
How would you survive if you, you know, I don't know. It definitely, I didn't really thought about it that way. That's exactly right. And the thing that's great about Inuritu. Am I saying his last name correctly?
Yeah, he had a real hard time with my name. So, like, you know, like, Donghol. Like, I was like, what, Donghol? And then he pronounced it for, and he was like, well, you try my name, motherfucker. And then he was like, Alejandro González Iñárritu. He like did this whole thing, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's pretty difficult.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think a mark of a really great filmmaker is, if you, just like you said, well, it's about a guy and he has a really shitty time. And then there's some guys who are on his side, some other guys who are not on his side. But the thing about him is, like, it's like try explaining Birdman, you know, like explaining it. But it's just like once he puts his filter on it,
oh man,
you know, you meet a guy like that. And you go, well, I think we just have to trust him because it's in his head and he's going to get it out there.
It's the same thing as Terrence Malick. I want to see Terrence Malick figure out what he's thinking about in front of me. You know what I mean? I want to see him figure out his own mind in front of me. I'm desperate to do that. Now, obviously, Alejandro's stuff, I mean, particularly with there's probably more of a narrative impulse in Revenant, that, you know what I mean? Like, just because the revenge element and all the rest of it. Which, but I want to see Alejandro deal with the story he wants to tell. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see him struggle to get this thing to the ground and really make sense of it. And I think he just did it so beautifully in this.
Yeah.
You know? But he's just one of those filmmakers. I'll just go and see anything he does. You know, there's a few of those.
How flexible are you? Because you've worked with so many great directors.
I'm pretty flexible. Legitimately,
that is his. Okay, first of all, the leg is around the head.
Yeah.
The leg amazing. Legitimately went around the head.
Yeah. So, pretty flexible.
Okay, good. Yeah. What if that was just the end? All right, I just want to see that. I just want to see that. But I mean, you know, you work with so many different great directors, which I imagine in some senses is intimidating and a little bit unknown. But how do you, you know, how do you come into a project? Are you pretty flexible in terms of, like, you know, I'm just going to let them tell me what, or do you come in and go, here's 9 ideas that I have about this?
I think you have to arrive with ideas and you have to be willing to change some of those ideas, because you can't. I think that's what's bringing about a movie is no one person will always have the best idea. So there's such a group of people, and at various times, each one of those people will have the best idea. And so you have to be open to taking that best idea when it's in front of you and understanding it and being able to decide, you know what I mean? But then you also have to, like, your job really as an actor is to fight for your guy. Mm-hmm. Like, my guy, I'm on his side. I don't care what he does. Like, I'm fighting for him. And so that's what you have to do. And sometimes that'll lead to conflict with a director, but I think that's good. And so I like fitting into different processes. Like, making a film like The Revenant is very, very different to making a film like Star Wars or Brooklyn or anything else. And they're all different from each other, too. But I like finding out what the new process is, because that keeps it interesting.
Sure.
You know, like, you don't just turn up and do what you did in the last movie and kind of do it in the same way or whatever. You turn up and you go, holy shit, this is all right. Like, you know, again, you start and you feel like, wow, I know nothing all over again. I have to learn all this. And that's great, you know. Like, it's great. The pressure of it is what keeps you going. You know, is what keeps you wanting to be in good things and try to be in good things. And, like, part of that is that at some point then you'll be bad in something. You know, you'll take a risk that doesn't pay off. But that has to be okay, because otherwise you'll stop taking risks, you know.
Sure.
I think that's part of it.
Do you feel like you've ever done that? Is there something you're saying, you're like, oh, I don't know?
Yeah, there's a couple of things I'm like, all right, you know what I mean? Like, I wish I'd gone about that differently, or I didn't achieve what I wanted to. And that's really, that can be a little bit crushing, but you try and learn from that then and fight forward. You know, like, I felt like I was too much on the back foot for a couple of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I allowed myself to be on the back foot, and I didn't just fucking punch at people who tried to keep me there. In a way, that was my job for those movies. That was what my character had to be to fulfill it. But I was very frustrated by the experience. And so then what was great about The Revenant was my character starts like that. He starts being pushed back by people around him, particularly, like, Tom Hardy's character's going hard on my guy, and, you know, like, bad decisions happen and my guy is responsible. And then at the end of the movie, he gets to man up.
Yeah.
You know, and I really fucking, like, I was so ready for that. You know, I was so ready to take that, and it was really, really nice. Really nice.
It is, when you say, you know, it's this new dynamic each time, it is pretty incredible, and that's what makes a good movie so special, is that a lot of people can't. It's very difficult even just to get a group of people together to decide on anything.
Yes.
But to get a group of people together and collectively decide what the best ideas are to make it. Like,
yeah.
That is that makes it a little bit extra special.
Yeah, it does, and you have to look to the director. You know, I mean, I've seen directors who aren't capable of making the best decision, but thank God I haven't worked with one of those for a long time. I haven't worked with one of those for a very, very long time. I've been super lucky. But, like, you know, you want your leader to be, I want my director to be my director.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, I'm always impressed then when somebody says, okay, no, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. I like that.
Do you go through the audition process still, or is it meeting with directors and talking about the character?
I haven't auditioned for a while.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, which is nice. Yeah, I didn't even meet Alejandro. I sent an email that said, I think my guy is the best guy in the film. I think he's the best human being in the film, and I'd love to fight for him. And I got the part, you know, like that was kind of it. Like
that's
that
fantastic.
That was great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and especially in a movie that size, like it was really unusual. Really unusual. So that was amazing, you know. But I met with JJ and Lawrence Kasdan for Star Wars, but I met them and it was already kind of a done deal if we got on, sort of thing. So it was fine. Yeah, yeah. I've been lucky like that.
And they're good. They're just good dudes. Like Lawrence Kasdan's a great guy.
He's a legend.
I mean, JJ's great, and Kathleen Kennedy. Like everyone's Everyone's funny and, you know, but capable and serious when they need to be serious. And it's just such a good, I don't know, it's a good group.
It's a really good group. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's part of the job of the studio and then part of the job of the director, you know what I mean? Like to get a good group there.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, like kind of casting the whole crew, like not just the cast, is so important with the film. And like they obviously did a great job with Star Wars.
And I'm purposely not talking a lot about Star Wars itself, because it's just impossible to talk about it without starting to give stuff away.
I know.
I don't want to do that to people, but you are great in the movie.
Oh, and thank
it's,
you.
It's so, you know, there's I don't want to start talking about scenes, but there's one particular scene where you're addressing a group.
Oh, the rally. That's in the trailer, so that's okay.
So,
yeah.
It's such a, you know, like that. I don't know.
I just got shades of Donald Trump in that scene.
No. My guy's a good speaker. My guy's just evil.
That's all it
is. He's not an evil moron. At least my guy's fucking intelligent.
Yeah, it seems like he's
scary the way this is going, right? Well, yeah. I don't want to talk about politics. Sorry, but
we are scared of the way this is going.
Yeah, every day.
You keep on thinking it's going to go off a cliff, and then it just keeps on not.
I feel like the media is not helping, though, because I feel like the media wants to, and we don't have to talk about this anymore, but I feel like the media wants
it's not my place to talk about anyway. I'm not American. Like, it's nothing to do
don't
with me or whatever,
we'll
so I don't even want
to. No, it's fine.
It has plenty to do with you, eventually.
But it's pretty crazy about it, is it? And I think the media's not helping when they go, yeah, he's surging in the polls. So whenever, it's like, well, which polls? And what are you, I think the story of him not going away is actually propelling the myth of it.
Yeah. But they just want to sell. They want to sell papers. That's the aim.
Yeah, they just want clicks. It's all clickbait now.
Yeah,
it's all clickbait. But what if this?
I got a phone call the other day about clickbait. Right, some website posted that I was in a car crash while I was doing a radio interview.
Oh, I saw that.
So I went on because somebody called me and they're like, my sister just called and asked, "Were you okay?" Because you know, I was like, "What? What?" What? I did three times like that. What? What? What?
He's really
that was
confused.
Yeah. So I was in a taxi on the way to the airport, and I was doing a radio interview for this radio program back home, and this van like swerved right in front of the taxi that I was in, and it was really dangerous and it was really close, but the guy, like the driver, did a brilliant job of like dodging it and just going around. Like, it wasn't a big spin or anything like that, but it was like, whoa, holy God. And so I was on the radio while I was doing it. I was like, whoa, we nearly had a crash just there, whatever. But the line was kind of crackly. It was clear we hadn't crashed.
Right.
It was clear we hadn't actually crashed,
because otherwise I would have gone, ah!
You know, like there would have been all those noises.
My guts are outside my body. They should be inside my body.
Put them back in.
Anyway, it was great. Portraying General
Star Wars in cinemas now. Yeah, just like your last.
Yeah,
a real professional. Yeah. It's out next week. It's a thrill ride. But a guy has a load of bad stuff happen to him.
No, I'm good. I can keep going. Just take those in.
And you hear Disney going, "Can we license his funeral?"
I don't know.
Well, yeah. So then, and then it went, and then it just turned into like that. I was in a car crash, and then car smash. Elevated it to smash.
then you have to go on social media and be like, I'm writing to you from beyond the grave.
I'm back.
Black
Mirror all over again.
I've come back. There's so much more to do. Are you writing anything currently?
Yeah, yeah. I'm still trying to write this film noir, you know, and then I'm also writing something which I've been on for a while. But I had a really good story for a film noir. I always wanted to do like a film noir in Ireland.
Yeah.
I just thought that would be the coolest thing. It would just be so, it's such a perfect place. Because like all the film noirs in the 40s and 50s were about like, men's place being threatened by women. Like that's where it kind of came from, a lot of it. You know what I mean? Because during the war and they came back and women had jobs and, it was all like upheaval in the way society worked. And so suspicion of women or whatever. But Ireland had a suspicion of women at that time too. I mean, you know, obviously in a lot of places it hasn't gone away. But like in the world, I don't mean Ireland. But and I just always thought that would be because of sexuality in the Catholic, you know, the church, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was just so scared of sexuality. So I always just thought that would be a really interesting place to send a set.
How far along are you
Ireland
with
in the 50s? I got the whole story mapped out, but I've had it mapped out for like 3 years. So I should stop. I don't talk about it normally, but you ask me and you just seem so sincere.
You shouldn't talk about stuff
you haven't done. But I write comedy sketches with all the time with my friend Michael, and we did at home. People stop me on the street more often for the comedy sketches than for anything else, which is really, really nice. And we did them to raise money for this hospice where my grandparents died. We did the original ones just to try and be funny and to do a TV show. And then we did a batch of them afterwards with my dad and stuff to raise money for the hospice. Like, you can go on and donate to the hospice. But one with my dad explaining what sex is, but he thinks that sex is fingering. It's really horrible, and like he's really graphic. I wake up and him and my mom are there to explain. I'm like, you don't need to explain sex. I'm 28, and he's like, okay, look, here's what happens. And she gets very excited, and he's like, you know, like, and then like some ladies like three fingers, some ladies like the full force. They call that the Kit Kat. That's fine. So we did those. We did those comedy sketches back home and stuff. So we write those all the time. Myself and Michael write those all the time, just so we have like a stack of them to make. If I end up with a couple months off, we could maybe just make them again. Like, I paid for them last time, and then we put them online. You could donate to the hospital. That was the way we did it. And so it's like we may do that again next year.
Well, where can people? You should tell people where to go for that.
Oh, it's called Immaturity for Charity. If you put in Immaturity for Charity into and then Seth Rogen, I realize, has Hilarity for Charity. So it looks like I just ripped him off, but I think
he ripped you off.
Yeah. God damn it, Seth Rogen.
Come on, seriously, man.
But Immaturity for Charity. If you look it up on YouTube, you can click on it then, and then you can donate to the hospice or whatever. And the Star Wars, the Omaze thing.
Oh, yeah. The Omaze thing is incredible.
They said they just sent a big check to the hospice as well, like, because I nominated them as my charity or whatever.
That's great.
Yeah, oh, wow. Like, it was like that. The best part of last night was hearing about this big check that had been written for the hospice. Like, that was the best thing of the whole
come
evening.
On.
How amazing is that? Like, just for the. Those guys to do that. I think that's amazing. They did not have to organize any of that stuff. The movie is going to make all the money. They don't have to worry about any of that sort of stuff. That's just actually goodwill, I think.
Well, I think they understand and they recognize that...
They realize that after Campbell's and the gum and the car mats that they had enough money.
I think they really do genuinely recognize... Star Wars is Star Wars because of the community of fans that has kept it at that way. And they saw pretty quickly when this expanded universe started developing out in the world and people were writing their own stories.
Yeah.
And so I think they really understand that Star Wars is a piece of humanity.
It's like a positive force in loads of ways, which is nice. Star Wars reference, spoiler alert, stop it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. How about a Fresca?
That was cool.
Making a comedy sketch with your family to raise money for the hospice that took care of your grandparents is such a lovely story. It's just a nice thing to be able to do.
No, it was great. And when I did that Squarehead video, we linked that to Immaturity for Charity as well. Angelina Jolie went on. She said it was her favorite music video that year. And she went on. She donated she gave $2,000 like just out of nowhere to the hospice, which is the most amazing thing. Just out of nowhere. Just did that. Like, she is the best.
That's pretty cool.
She is the best. And that's a massive name drop, but she is also a force for good in the world, I believe, very strong.
Jolie approved.
Yes, exactly.
Immaturity for Charity. But that's... So do you see... Do you see writing comedy? Like, do you want to write when you get done with the noir piece? Which I really think, if you have some time, you know, if you keep noodling, sooner or later it'll be done.
It'll happen.
Know?
Yeah, my brother is a writer, and he's gonna end up a better writer than me. So maybe he'll write it or something when he's got time, he can do it. But the comedy thing is just so much fun, and it's just a really nice way to spend time with my friend. We meet up in coffee shops and we just tell try and make each other laugh with like the stupidest, like they're basically dick jokes. We were going to call it dick jokes for charity, but like we didn't want to put that in the link into the hospice, you know. It just would have been super weird. Like in one of them, like a bee flies down his wiener,
yeah,
like there's a bee on the tip of his wiener,
sure,
and then he's all worried, and his girlfriend's going to swat it off with a newspaper, and they count down from three, and then right at the last minute it cuts to a close up and it flies down the tip of his it's really silly.
We're really helping sick people.
Yeah, no,
here.
I know. That one didn't go to broadcast.
Thanks for donating for it.
But so they're really, it's just silly. I just like silly toilet. It's toilet humor.
Yeah, you were in the right place for that. You were in 100% the right. My sense of humor did not progress past age 15.
I know. I stopped. My comedy brain didn't move forward. It just got filthier.
I'm disappointed by myself a lot of the time.
All the time.
Like, really? Down there again? Isn't there another well from which to...
And you realize that, like, most of the, like, you know, you go to a dinner party and feel absolutely, wow, I'm old now, we're at a dinner party. And then inside 15 minutes, you've turned the conversation to poo again. Again, you're like, I can't do this every time I turn up with...
And not everyone is on board it, unfortunately.
No, of course they're not. It's a stupid thing to talk about.
Well, I think maybe you're hanging hilarious. Out with the wrong people.
I saw a fella on the bus once, right? And he was up talking to the driver. I got on the bus, everybody was quiet. I was like, what's going on? And I sat down, I looked up, there was this guy in like a suit, like he was in his 50s talking to the driver. He was standing up chatting to the driver. He had like about this length, like an arm's length of toilet paper hanging out the back of his trousers. And the bottom of it was all rolled up in a cone. It was covered in poo. No. It's the worst thing. And he was just chatting to the driver, and everyone on the bus was just deathly silent.
Here's the big twist of the story. Wasn't his.
How did that happen? Yeah.
Like, that's where you like, you start.
But how did it happen?
I don't know.
How did the poo end up out of the trousers? Like, what?
He's a very uncoordinated individual.
He was too quick to pull his pants up, I was talking to Sean McGinley,
and he was like, pulled his pants up too quick, maybe a bit of sweat involved.
Yeah.
Stuck it to the back of his back or something. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he's up there, and like the colors of it were like an inverted fox's tail. You know the way a fox's tail is like brown and then white at the end? It was like that, but like...
It was the reverse.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not lost on me that this turned into like CSI poop victim. It's just like... So there was probably...
For the
molecule.
Semen. Where's the semen?
It's got to be in there somewhere.
It'll track us to the killer. It's always the semen. They always come before they go.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I know.
Murdering is...
If I was going to kill
really
somebody,
hot.
I wouldn't come right before I left. And I would never get caught.
Yeah,
never
absolutely. Caught. Oh, by the way, here. I forgot to mention, there's one last little thing here. But it's... is your dad, when you were first...
Don't bring up my dad after talking about that.
So speaking of...
I let myself down. I'm sorry, Dad.
Your dad did do a sketch about fingering. I think he'd probably be okay.
No, I know.
He'd probably be okay.
He's very funny in it.
I mean, did you... You know, when you decided that you wanted to be an actor, was it... You know, did he say, like, are you sure? Or was it, great?
It wasn't... Either. I think he understood, like, because my brother also, as I say, is like a phenomenal actor. And Brian was probably always going to be an actor. He just seemed like he had it. You know what I mean? Even when we were kids and stuff, the way he was able to go into his imagination was so incredible. So, and then he started doing it straight out of school, Brian. I think they were like, if it makes you happy, then you should try to do it. Because that's what my dad did. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't decide that you can't, like, achieve your dreams. I mean, but the problem is the world might decide that for you. But you should give yourself every chance. They understood that both my parents understood that we knew that it wouldn't be an easy way to make a living.
Right.
And that it may not be a way to make a living at all. Because we'd seen my dad, out of work. And my dad wrote plays and stuff and put them on in Dublin and all the rest of it, like trying to create his own work when he wasn't working himself. So we knew that the odds are stacked against everybody who tries to be an actor. But most things worth doing, the odds are stacked against you. So they were very supportive, very helpful, and I'm sure a bit concerned sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's hard. I'm sure that thing as a parent where you oh, well, I did what I want to do. You should be able to do what you want to do, but I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that was it. But, like, you know, my dad became an actor, like, in the 80s. Like, there was, like, you know, there was a recession in Ireland. He had four kids, and he was a teacher. And when he was 34, he had been acting in the evenings, like, doing plays in the evenings and all the rest of it, decided to try and make a living as an actor, supported wholly by my amazing mother, with four kids at home. Like, that's insane. Like, that's somebody taking a big gamble.
Yeah, you know, so if your dad can do that, I feel like that's inspiring. Like, okay, maybe
if you're
could...
just out of college, exactly. Like, if you're just out of college, then it's like, okay, well, I don't, you know, I mean,
you
know, I don't
one
have the
mouth
pressure
to feed,
of,
not
you
four,
know,
that's
yeah,
six.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you know what it shows you is it shows you that most people create their own limitations out of thin air based on whatever sort of, you know, there are real limitations in the world.
Yeah,
I understand.
Of course,
things
many.
Happen.
No, and I was very lucky. I grew up, I was blessed. What was it? You know, like the whatever they say, like the lottery of where you're born.
Mm. Yeah.
I was born, I had everything with Louis C.K.'s thing. You know what I mean? Like a white middle class male in America.
Yeah.
That's how he, you know what I mean? Like he just, that's the luckiest thing that you can, you know. But actually, apart from that, really, is the luckiest thing you can be born into is love. My family is very, very, I'm very lucky for the family I have, you know, so that kind of helps.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and I do, I mean, I'm sure your dad must hear this all the time, but In Bruges is like one of it's such an unexpected movie from where it starts and where it goes, and it's such a beautiful story, and your dad is so amazing.
Everything
in
about
it.
That film is beautiful. And that's, you know, that's Martin McDonagh, man. And that was my first job, was with the writer-director of that film. That was my first job. I did a play that he wrote. He is an amazing
yeah,
writer.
Your dad, Colin Farrell, is amazing.
Yeah. He's everybody in the film is great. The two of them. I think I read recently Martin was saying he'd like to get my dad and Colin back together again for something. So that would be good. It won't
oh,
be
I hope it's
too,
funny again.
I'm sure it will be. Everything Martin writes is funny. Everything he writes is funny.
Funny, but not... I mean, it's funny, but... like, situationally funny. And
no, I know. It's not shit jokes. No, like what I do. No, it's totally...
That's what I do,
you're
too.
You're totally right. You're totally right. That's what it is. He made, it's the characters and the situations just make you
but
care
then,
for them.
And heart-wrenching at the same time.
And they're not jokes. They're just, like, situations which make you absolutely cack yourself laughing. You know?
What if he was like, you know, I really want to develop your bee flying into a dick into a full-length...
I think there's a full-length feature in this.
I think, you know, if your dad...
I
want to
hear about
you
it from the bee's
one.
Perspective.
It's going to be a 3D movie.
Jerry Seinfeld's agreed to voice the bee.
This is going in a weird direction that we never
so, yeah,
predicted.
What's the deal with penises?
I better go in and check it out. And then just 90 minutes later. 90 minutes later.
Just, have darkness. And then he comes back.
I have an amazing story to tell.
It's like inner space when he goes.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. In Bruges is one of the greats. And then Martin's brother, John, wrote The Guard and directed The Guard, which is another amazing film. Have you seen The Guard?
No, I haven't seen The Guard.
If you liked In Bruges, I would highly recommend The Guard. Brilliant. It's my dad and Don Cheadle.
Done.
I love it. Yeah. Into it.
I'm on vacation in a couple days. I'll have a couple weeks
do
off.
That. Absolutely.
Definitely gonna do it.
You could just go to Ireland.
I know, but I gotta travel so much all the time. The problem is,
well, yeah,
oh,
true
fucking who?
I travel for work.
Oh, I have to travel.
I travel for work, so I have to travel almost every weekend. So, like, you know, getting on planes and putting things in tiny bags and then never acclimating to a time zone.
Just buy all new stuff and then throw it out. Don't pack.
Don't pack anything.
I'm saying,
some
if you want to make it stress free,
don't they? They do like two suitcases.
Yeah.
Like, when you come back. That one's already packed, and
that's
one you put in the laundry, and then you just take that one.
But there are some vacations that you come back from, and you're like, I need a vacation. You know, because when you go to a place like Ireland, you're not just going to lie around. Like, you need to see it.
You need to get out and see the place, yeah. But that's the thing. You would want to clear your schedule and not be worried about trying to do stuff back home. You'd want to just be there to enjoy it.
Like, Shut down for a while.
Exactly.
Is that what you're going to do for the holidays, just shut down?
Yeah, I get back on the 21st, so I'll... relax. My brothers will be home. We'll all hang out, and it'll be like a family Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, so Star Wars opens the 18th. The Revenant opens the 25th.
Yeah,
you're going to be in two of the biggest movies of the holiday season. I mean, that's pretty.
It's cool. It's cool.
It is
like
cool.
It's yeah. I was in a cinema the other day, and they had like the posters beside each other, and that was That was cool.
You're like, yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know if you knew this. And I stood between them and just hoped people recognized me for hours. Not a sausage.
Pulling your hair back for both movies. Well, actually, yeah, exactly. Revenant, your hair is a little shaggier than it is in Force.
I know, yeah, that's the problem. You know, I need to get a look and stick with it.
Yeah, just
if
one.
I really want to be recognized all the time, which is my dream.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you could just not blend in with that shock of red hair.
What's your dream? To constantly be recognized. Yeah. That's my dream.
No, when I was in Toronto, I bought like these neon Converse. Whenever I stay in a new city while I'm working, I always try and get something new. You know what I mean? Like that I wouldn't get away with wearing in Dublin. Yeah. Because in Dublin, somebody would just make fun of you. Yeah. That's the thing. Don't wear anything weird in Dublin. Someone will make fun of you. But so I was walking around these neon cons, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? You know what I mean? Like it's like walking around saying, everybody look at me.
But yeah. You're somebody else there, you know?
I know. But,
you're Toronto you.
Yes, exactly. I'm the new me. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You have a different relationship to every city.
Neon Donal.
Right? That's a near. What did you get? Did you get anything in Los Angeles new?
This time, no. But, I got zero. But, like, I've got a teddy bear hat and normally a cap. Oh, I got a cap when I was in Las Vegas. I got a cap.
Oh, you're lucky cap. That's all you got when you were in Las Vegas. Yeah,
and BD. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Don't fuck the cap. You're not supposed to fuck the cap. Just put it on your head.
That's disgusting.
That is amazing.
No, I didn't get VD in Vegas, by the way, just for the people who... I just know the headline. Donald Gleason Henderson. And Car Smash and get Henderson. VD in Vegas.
The poor man has had a tough month.
So if you run into Toronto, Donald, you can still fuck him. He doesn't have VD.
Stop talking about this.
What are you talking about? No, we're just trying to... What are you talking about?
We get it. We're just trying to get you laid, bro.
The guy on the bus? Do it for him.
Wait, the guy on the bus was you the whole time. Twist.
You know, there's a special kind of guy who goes home at the end of that day, takes off his hat, takes off his jacket, and then, does that guy go, oh my God, I need to backtrack and apologize to everyone. I can never show my face again.
No, or is he books like, a ticket to the Japanese forest that makes you kill yourself.
I think that's ultimately, yeah.
Get the hell out of Dodge. I think you just don't get that bus ever again. You know what I mean? You're taking cabs or you're walking from now
Honey,
on.
Honey, we're moving.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't be on this bus route anymore.
I'll tell you what I would do. There's a legendary thing where if Prince messes up a guitar lick, he does it again so that you think it's on purpose.
Oh.
You get on that bus every fucking day.
I love it.
Yeah, with toilet paper. And you don't comment on it. You just be that's
it's
that.
A look. And next thing you know,
everyone's going to be doing it.
More shit.
That was me.
I started the shit tail craze, and I get no credit for it. Now it's been trademarked by Nike.
Yeah, the inverted foxtail. I don't believe it.
And now you can get fucking BB-8 shit tails everywhere.
Don't mix BB-8
in. Even I am upset by that, Matt Myra.
No, don't do
I'm
that.
Just making a joke at the licensing machine that is Disney.
But how does a Wookiee, whenever I think about that, whenever I think about a bipedal creature covered in hair,
yeah,
I always think that would be problematic during those periods of time because... You know, dogs are quadrupeds, so their body sort of forces the waste out of them. But if you're bipedal, it just basically...
Oh, you're worried about him shitting.
Yeah, just getting all matted all the time. Like,
dogs get matted.
Yeah. They do. Yeah, I guess they do. Yeah, I guess
it's
they
just,
do.
It's just,
it's fine. He'll be okay. I'm not worried about it.
I know, and, you know, they seem like clean creatures anyway. Like, they're not like dogs who are like, woo.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they're...
It's Ewoks would be the dirty ones. Ewoks would be the dirty ones.
I don't know. I don't think any of the creatures in Star Wars are walking around with, like, waste on the back of
Jar Jar.
To use your words.
Jar Jar would be the one.
I mean, it's possible.
Why does everybody look at me? Oh, there's a space toilet paper hanging down in your... They call it space toilet paper.
Just in case you didn't know.
Of course. Well, it's been fun to tell people, like, how was the movie? Great. I think it was great. They only devoted 40 minutes to Jar Jar. I mean, it was really a bold move. But we wanted to know about the Gungans.
The good news is it's the first 40 minutes.
It's the first 40
minutes.
Yeah,
so you really open strong. It's going to be weird now a couple of weeks. Oh, look, the dog's sleeping.
Yeah, she just sleeps. Scout the whole time.
It's just nice now because the film will be out. We don't. You know what I mean? There'll be no more...
No more secrecy, weirdness no more about weirdness. No
yeah,
more
but it's good for me too because people will realize that I'm not in it like a huge, you know what I mean? Like, because I think everyone was wondering if I was going to be in like all the time, and like, I wasn't even allowed to talk about how many days I filmed on set or any of that sort of stuff. So it's nice because I can just, you know, it's like the pressure's off.
I think your character's pretty important.
No, he's got stuff to do. I'm not being self-deprecating or anything like that. He's got stuff to do, and he is important.
When you see
but he's
what his function in the story is, like he's pretty, and it is a really interesting. Never mind.
Yeah. No, himself and Kylo Ren have a good dynamic, I think. You know, I'm interested by that. But,
Anyway, you played a great Darth Vader.
You know, we should just throw you guys in remake in Bruges with those two.
With which
with
two?
With Kylo Ren.
Me and Adam Driver? Martin, if you're listening, please. Every day of the week. Because Adam's hilarious. Adam's really funny. He would kill that.
No, but I want you as your characters in Star Wars forced into that situation.
Hux and Ren together?
Yeah. At last, yeah.
They're
Hitman in Bruges,
They're sent to Jakku or something, and they're just stuck there for a couple of days.
Jakku, yeah. Yeah, I would do it.
Yeah, I would do it.
Well, you are delightful and wonderful and hilarious, and I cannot congratulate you enough on all the amazing things. And it was so nice of you to come after the premiere and sit down and chat with us.
It was great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You're in town, please.
That would be awesome.
And we'll help you let people know about if you make more charity videos for charity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let us know.
Oh, that's
and we'll,
so sweet.
We'll help message them out.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much. Excellent. That's really nice of you.
Now, we end the podcast by saying enjoy your burrito. It's our sign off to tell people to enjoy their present and not focus on the past and the future. But you have such a lovely voice. Would you please say enjoy your burrito to our audience to sign us off?
Enjoy your burrito. No, that sounded like I didn't mean it. Enjoy your burrito.
Yeah, see?
There we go. Yeah,
that second time you meant it. First time, I don't know what that...
No, I know. He was making fun of it.
Yeah.
He thought he was above the burrito, and he was wrong.
Stupid.
I know,
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels...
There are murders in all of the books.
...that she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.